focus on me.
On me?
Yeah, you may take your seat.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You must relax. Just feel free. Yeah, nobody is going to crucify you here. It's just interviews. All what you are going to do, you have only 25 minutes to respond to questions, and honorable members will be asking you questions. Others will be making follow-up questions. But firstly, we need to start with introduction. My name is Zonhlanhla Ncube Ndaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. On my left-hand side, I have our committee secretary, Nelson Obatana, and Tembeka on my right-hand side, who is my timekeeper for today. Can honorable members introduce themselves?
Morning. My name is Dori Murutwa, a member of this committee.
Good
morning. I'm Maluleke Buitumelo Choi, member of this committee.
Sabonani Ma Igamalamu Mokule Timateke, member of this committee.
Sabona and Tavisang Igamalamu Spongile Makot Kaula, member of this committee.
Merama, making nothing, Kikikana, member of this committee.
Melama, Terry Sander, member of the committee. Melama, Lipsunaga, Kinomsama Chesi, the member of the committee.
Good morning, Wilma Nia Druchen, voicing me as the sign language interpreter, Francois Dijssel. Welcome to Parliament.
Okay, we have other staff members. Our legal person is out now. Okay. Tell us about yourself and why do you think you are a suitable candidate for this position?
Thank you very much. Thank you for also inviting me to this interview session.
The lady, sorry. Honorable Dudley, can you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. I'm Chairman Dudley. I'm a member of this committee and also...
Your mic is off.
I'm a member of the National Assembly and of this committee.
Okay. Okay.
Can I continue?
Yes.
Okay. I want to say thank you very much for also having invited me for this interview session. My name is Mwana Matimba. Salome Kutwane, commonly known as Boogie. I'm a grandmother and a mother of three. I'm a teacher by profession, and I'm also a lawyer by profession. I've worked in a number of areas. I used to be the director of the Law Society in the then Botswana, where I was in charge of the practices of about 500 attorneys. And then I also worked for what we used to call the National Institute for Public Interest Law and Research, NIPILA, as the head of the gender unit of that institution. I worked with what we call WILDAF, Women in Law and Development in Africa, which is a regional body. It's a network of organizations, and at that time, I was based in Zimbabwe, in charge of about 38 smaller offices in different countries. I was the CEO of that at that time. I was contracted by the University Center for Human Rights of the University of Pretoria, to do some gender work together with a team where I was mainly focusing on women's rights, and children's rights. I have also been a consultant for quite some time. You know, if you look at my CV, there will be different areas, different times where I was working full-time, where I was working as a consultant. But before I get to the consultancies, I also worked in government as a senior advisor to one of the ministers in government. I worked for the Commission for Gender Equality for some time, but I left before the end of my term because I was taking a position of the advisor to the minister at that time. So I left the commission before the end of my term at that time. Excuse me. As a consultant, I've really worked in a number of areas and different countries. I was at some point contracted by the AU Gender Department to assist them with a number of policy issues, because at that time they were still putting in place the office. So I had to write quite a number of documents. For instance, they had asked me to simplify the solemn declaration on gender equality in Africa for the office, and also assist with a number of policies within that office. I've done work as a consultant with the then UNIFEM, which is now UN Women. I've been doing a lot of training for UNIFEM at that time. I've done a lot of work with UN Women, where they've been contracting me to assist. For instance, they asked me at some point to assist the Department of Women with some documentation. UN agencies like UNDP asked me to go and train for them in Lesotho, for instance, on issues of gender mainstreaming. I have also done some work with other institutions, training in government. I've done that a lot, training different departments, writing documents for instance, I wrote the first manual on mainstreaming gender in government for the Department of Social Development some time ago. I keep going there to sort of review the document time and again. I can also develop some documents. For instance, I've been doing some work for the CGE as a consultant even last year. I had really tried to convince them to follow the now what is called the after the MDGs. We done with the MDGs, then came in the Sustainable Development Goals, and I've been trying to assist them along those lines as well. I've written some documents for them so that they can train in the municipalities on how to deal with the SDGs using the framework of gender mainstreaming within the SDGs. I think that's a summary of what I've been doing and who I am really. The reason why I think why I should be considered for the position as a commissioner, I was once there, and I've been working with the commission, even though not directly, but they've been using my expertise here and there. Development of material, for instance, the review of issues like when they had to write the reports on how government is doing in terms of CEDAW. I've helped them deal with that. I've helped them write materials on debating platform for action. So if I go back there, it will be a matter of continuing some of the work that I had started before, which I left, and which after leaving, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think they managed to go on with it that much. And I can respond to questions. I don't think somebody asks me why I think so. And the whole thing around working on the SDGs, one of the things that really make me want to go back there is the whole picture around how do we take the Sustainable Development Goals as they are now, because it's still a new thing that is now happening after the MDGs, and having to look at our own national plan, the national plan that the government has come up with. How do we look at gender equality taking up our own NDP and taking the SDGs. Because for me, that is a tool that you can use to try to deal with issues of inequalities in our communities. So if you look at the SDGs, all those goals of the SDGs, very critical. The whole issue around Agenda 2030, it's very critical. So I feel if I can make a difference, I can add value to the work that we do, that they do as a commission, excuse me, in terms of making sure that our country achieves the goals, all the 17 goals that are there. So I think I can make a contribution towards that as well. That's just but one of the reasons why I feel I can do that.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mam Story, Honorable Nomsa, Honorable Kaula, Honorable Kekane, Honorable Manyoni, and Nokolo.
Yes, good day, Auswiki. Yes. I couldn't recognize you when I went out. Now I saw you. You are directly in front of me. It's good that we have you here again. And we have hit on the nail of some of the things I wanted to ask from you, being a policy person, about the Sustainable Development Goals, especially the Agenda 2030. If you can just unpack it, what you think, which areas should we focus on. And when you left the CGE, I think it wasn't quite clear what we have done on the gender equality barometer. Maybe when you left, because we wanted the CGE to tell us how far they are, but it wasn't very clear. Maybe you can tell us what you would focus on. Also, the issue of sex workers, the decriminalization, if you could go into that. So far, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mam Story. Mam Kaula.
Ngibonge Sihlalo. Hayi, ngizothi kaqhafo, basuke sazokuqhubeka. Ngibonge, ngikubingelele lapha eMhlabiseni. Sibonge ukuthi ufikile la, ngiyabonga.
No, Salume, Ngwana Matiba, Mti Kutswane.
Hayi, eMhlabiseni. Oh, ngiyaxolisa, ngiyaxolisa,
number 4.
Engizokuqela-ke nje la kuwena, ngithi ukukubuza nje. Uthini ngalabantu besifazane othola ukuthi sebashonelwa amadoda, kodwa laba bantu uma uthi ababheka bakafiki ngisho kwi-age yokuthi bahole izimpesheni, and banalezi ngane ezizintandane njengoba nalolu bhubhane lukhona. Abagcina sebefudukela emadolobheni bofuna imisebenzi, bagcina sebehlala endaweni ebizwa ukuthi Mtyondolo, abanye bathi imkhukhu. Le mkhukhu esha daily, phinde yakhiwe eminye, kanjalo kanjalo. Okunye ile ndaba yamakhosi, abantu basemakhaya abakawazi ama-rights abo, nabawaziyo bayasaba ukuphumela obala ngabo. Uthini ngalo muntu ogana emakhaya kodwa uthole ukuthi eshonelwe indoda ngenxa yokuthi akavumanga ukungenwa? Kwase kubonakala ukuthi-ke manje ngoba kusho ukuthi njengoba engafuni ukungenwa unqaba namafa leya ndoda, aze agcine sehambile athathe imithwalo azohlala emadolobheni ngoba lawo macala akhona mhlawumbe wayigama inkosi. Ngifuna ukwazi ukuthi wena njengaweke thina uzosithembisa kanjani, usithembisani ukuthi uzosilwela kulabo bantu ukuthi bakwazi kokuqala ukuthi labantu bathole imihlaba ukuthi bakhe izindlu zabo, nothi ukugrepha umhlaba, kodwa le mihlaba yothole ukuthi ikhona ayisebenzi muntu bakwazi labantu bakhe kubona, kanjalo nokuthi bathole nezimayini noma izimboni zabo
kuze bakwazi ukuphila ukuze bayibone ukuthi kulelizwe njengabantu besifazane banjani babalulekile nesithunzi sabo nezindlu ezikhombisayo yomuntu wesifazane ozolala nabantwana bakhe namathoilethi. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Good morning, ma'am. What is your view with respect to vulnerable women, in particular the widows, who in most cases or instances are dispossessed of their land after the death of a spouse or a male spouse, owing to the traditional laws that are often applicable in rural areas? And these women end up being victims and constantly looking for housing. And I just want to know, how are you going to assist these women and restore their dignity? We've seen this in most instances in informal settlement, where most of the time they're devastated by the fires. So I'd like to know, how are you going to assist these women, in particular in dealing with the laws that are applied by traditional leaders in rural areas? Thank you.
Can I from any angle? Because I just wanted to take the last part one, because most of the areas that I got the story from, it's more about widows' rights than anything else. The issue around widows' rights, it will need us to really go out and educate our people about the rights of the widows. For example, let me just give you an example of we have the protocol on the rights of women, which has a specific clause that talks about the rights of widows. And I'm not aware of anybody who's implementing that part of the law, because there's a lot of information that is coming out as to how we can work with widows specifically. So the protocol itself outlines and it gives us substance in terms of what needs to be done. Education is one of those issues, educating them about their rights. From the work that I've been doing, for instance, with some of the people from the traditional areas, I've been working very closely with Bombadu Khosi in the Northwest. They had requested me to sort of try to unpack the law for them. And they were actually looking at the role of the wives of the chiefs in terms of issues of gender equality. So I've done some work with them, and I'm still working with them along those lines. And among other things, they have a specific role to play, because as the wife of the chief or the Khosi in a particular area, if they can take up the responsibility of providing guidance in terms of the rights of their subjects in the villages, I think that is going to make a lot of difference. The problem that we have at the moment is that they themselves are not aware of some of those rights, from my experience working with them, and they don't have a way of... there's always a fight, in a sense, because they are complaining that their husbands always look at it, you know, from a negative point of view, as if they are competing. So I'm working with them to define their roles. What role can they play so that it is harmoniously they can work with their husbands, but at the same time concentrate more on the rights of women in their different villages? So I've just started that. I'm just doing it in the Northwest only. I haven't been to other areas because they had to contact me to come and assist them. But the whole issue around widows' rights, simple things like explaining to them what the law says about their rights as widows. There was a time when there was a huge argument in one of the villages in Bafokeng, where they were talking about, you know, the estates. What do you do? My husband dies, and then the next thing the woman comes, have children I don't know about, and the next thing they claim. So explaining those little things to them, it really made a lot of difference, because then they know what the law says. And if we want to make sure that we make a difference in their lives, looking at the rights of widows, there's a lot of information around the stuff, the subject matter that goes into that part of the project. CEDAW, for instance, provides us with a lot of information on how to deal with specific issues. There is this new, we call it general recommendation of the convention, which is specifically about rural women. So the committee talks, gives you information on how to deal with issues of rural women. So the commission, well, I've been working with them, trying to show them some of those things, that this is what, where you should go, this is what you go and do. But I don't think they have the capacity in terms of doing those kind of things. Not capacity in terms of human capacity, but capacity in terms of information as to how to go about implementing those kind of things. So all the issues that have been raised about the rights of widows, the pensions, the rights, their rights in terms of having houses, we need to have a specific program, an education program on how the CGE should understand the fact that widows have rights and this is how we should be dealing with those kind of rights. So it's my area. I'm very passionate about those because I'm dealing with it on the ground with some of the villages, like I said. Issues of land rights, the right to have to own land, not just to have rent, but to also own ownership of that land. It's still an issue, especially in the rural areas. But there's information as to how do we go about dealing with those kind of issues. So it's not happening, because people don't have the knowledge of what is specifically there to assist us to deal with it. But the CEO General Recommendations, they have a lot of information with regard to what needs to be done. So what I think the CGE should really look at as well is the fact that they must come up with a unit that specifically deals with women's rights. Because gender equality, the way we are dealing with it, is as if things are normal, and it's as if things are okay, therefore men and women have to be, you know, given the same kind of opportunities. And yet we know there are a lot of issues, a lot of stumbling blocks that need to be dealt with before you can even start talking about the right, equality. So for me, all those issues that have been raised, they are more about what I refer to as substantive equality. Because the way we are looking at equality, it depends. If you just talk about gender equality, it can mean many things to many people. But if you start looking at formal equality and substantive equality, looking at the equality of the results of what you have, looking at what needs to be done, there are something blocked somewhere. If it's formal equality, it doesn't look into those kind of things. But the minute you talk about substantive, it's not a matter of just having laws and policies and whatever. You also deal with the kind of problems that women specifically come across as, you know, problems. And you want to look at how best you can deal with those. So for me, the CGE has to have a specific, whatever they call it, a unit or a department or whatever, a women's rights program that is going to deal with women's rights. Because women, although it's gender, we're moving towards equality, we are not there. We are still very far from there. And for us to get there, we need to get a way of uplifting the women first, and then from there, start looking at how equal men and women can be. So for me, a program on women's rights, that is going to deal with all those kind of things. Your land rights, any other thing, widows' rights and everything else. If they can have that unit, that is going to specifically focus on that, and then start educating people about those rights. Things like ukungena, for me, it's something that needs to be attended to very seriously as well. Because it impacts very negatively on the rights of women. So that kind of a program for me.
Meaning? With that. Can you explain that?
Yeah.
Ukungenwa.
No. Ukungenwa. Is it not?
Sorry.
No?
I guess it's your husband passed away.
Yeah.
Then your brother husband must take you by.
Oh, okay.
So those are kind of things that women have to know. You know, for me, it's another example that goes together with that. Is, you know, we have a law that talks about the recognition of customary marriage rights. And every time I try to unpack that, people think I'm creating my own story. Because I keep saying to them, you know, if women understood how that act works, I don't think many men would be hearing too many women. Because that act was promulgated to try to deal with the problems that women have. And for the mere fact that women don't understand that act themselves, nobody cares about that act. So simply, legal literacy is one of the things that will be looked into if the CG comes up with a women's rights program, by the way. So educating women about these laws and rights, it's not a lawyer thing. It's something that everybody has to understand. So for me, simplifying the law and making sure that people understand their rights, not just rights, but also responsibilities, is very critical. And I think if we can have something like that, it will be very, very helpful. The issue around unpacking the SDGs. Unpacking the SDGs. SDGs has been, for me, that's the best thing that ever happened. You know, because if you look at all those goals, the 17 goals, each one of them has an element of gender equality. And a lot of problems that we have, you know, we used to complain that the MDGs were not covering gender equality properly, but with the SDGs, they've tried to make sure that it covers almost everything. So each goal has a specific role. It has an element of gender in it. We want to know how sanitation, water and sanitation affects women. We want to know how labor, employment affects women. We want to know education, health, and you name all the goals. Each one of those goals. The city, if they can adopt that approach of using the SDGs in order to achieve gender equality, I'm telling you, come 2030, we will kind of made it in terms of meeting the objectives of our own NDP and the objectives of the goals as set out in the SDGs. So it is a program that, for as far as I'm concerned, we can try to change the way we do things within the Commission. There's a goal 5 that is for gender equality specifically. That specifically deals with issues of, like, for instance, gender-based violence and some other things. Your sex workers, the problems as well, they will fall under that. But each and every goal of those SDGs, very critical, because they cover a lot of areas that have to do with issues of gender equality. So if you're moving towards 2030, in terms of our own NDP, in terms of the UN program on the SDGs, if we can adopt the approach towards getting our moving towards gender equality, for me, adopting that approach of using your SDGs so that you can get there will make a lot of difference. Because then everybody at the Commission will know what role to play. For instance, for me, I'm of the view that commissioners as well must each look at a goal, a specific goal, and try to work around that goal so that they can get involved as well in terms of how to achieve these goals. So for the sake of our own country, for us to be able to move towards gender equality by 2030, I would really recommend strongly that the SDGs, let's use one of the approaches. Let it be the SDGs. The Gender Equality Barometer. It's okay. I know about it. I had chosen not to really concentrate on it because there were some issues for me which were not very realistic about it. And it has been there for years. It has never been updated. It has never been reviewed. I have my own little reservations about the barometer itself. It's a good tool, but it needs to be reviewed seriously as well, because it is not in line with the developments as they are as now. So there's a need to review that barometer seriously. So we need to look at that.
Okay. I think it's enough for this question.
Okay.
You have 25 minutes. You must mind your time.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Honorable Nomsa. I said Honorable Nomsa, Kekane, Macheke, and Nicole. Ne?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Ms. Salome. Actually, I'm very interested in what you said. You're talking about the SDGs, and yet you've been a former commissioner. You've been in the CGE previously, and one of the goals of SDGs is gender focal points. It's national gender missionary and mainstreaming. And now today you're sitting here. I mean, your CV reads like you have vast experience on all these issues. So I'm a little bit concerned. It's a good thing, but I'm also a bit concerned because you've been a commissioner. And yet, as a country, we're still battling with the same issues. Like something as easy as gender focal points, they haven't been realized. You find them in different departments, but they are not allocated in the right offices. So they have no influence and they have no teeth. That also going back to CGE. CGE, what you've seen with CGE is that you have reports upon reports. Talking about CEDO reports, I mean, you mentioned all of them within your CV. And yet you don't see, you just see the reports, but you don't see where do you go from there after the report has been drawn, after all the issues have been highlighted. Where do you go as a country? Why are we not able to achieve, you know, obviously the goals that you're talking about? So that is a bit concerning. Somebody of your caliber that has been within the commission, and yet you are still grappling with the same issues. And also the issue of, you're talking about even SATU, the influence of SATU. I think you wrote that. It's in your target group's strategy. What is it that you're going to use? Yeah, you're talking about, you know, making sure that CGE has an influence in SATU. SATU has been there for a very long time, including during your time as a commissioner. And we've seen how it actually influences, its negative influence within the rural areas, especially in provinces like the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. So I would like you to tell me what is it that you intend to do regarding the issue of SATU and interfering in the issues of education in the country. And also the capacity of municipalities, because in one of the SDG goals is that the municipalities within their own budget, I don't remember the percentage of the budget, should be directed in empowering women, economic empowerment. And also that is also something that is just on paper, it hasn't been realized. So I just want to find out what is it that you are bringing that is fresh, that is going to be able to help us to achieve, because you've been there, and but what is it that you are bringing that's different this time?
Mom, keep it a minute. Okay. The issue of GFPs, I once raised it with the commission, and in my view, I think we have to start with the universities, because they're the ones who are producing the people that you would want to have as a focal point. My view is that there's a need for us to interact, for the CGE actually, to interact with the universities and find out exactly what it is that they do in their courses for gender equality. You go to different universities, they're autonomous, it's a fact, fine. But the kind of curriculum that the universities have, I had once asked the CGE to get in touch with the universities and find out exactly what they are teaching the students. I did that because I had a very, very bad experience. My own daughter was part of the bad experience I had, where she was at one of the universities. And the next thing, she called me and said, "But Ma, what kind of gender are you dealing with? Because here I'm taught the history of a Russian woman, you know?" So I feel if the CGE can sort of have some interaction with the universities to discuss the content of what they teach in their curriculum of gender and whatever it is that they do, it will try to help us meet the problems that we have halfway. The experience, again, that I have working with government gender focal points, it's not just enough to talk about the level where they are. It's also very important to talk about the capacity that they have. Do they understand these issues? I found, not all of them, but I found many of them, they've been given those positions because it is part of employment. They've got employment, they've given the position. And then once you start interacting with them in terms of the substance of what needs to be done, it becomes a different story. I'll give you an example of, you know, the Public Service Commission conducted some research in 2007 on mainstreaming gender in the public sector. That report, a very good report that was produced, and there were findings, there were recommendations. every time I interact with a gender focal point from government, I'll be asking them about the recommendations of the their own Public Service Commission report. Nobody understands. Nobody even knows about that. So you ask yourself, the gender that they're dealing with there, because this is this talks to them directly. The Public Service Commission researched on their own way, the work that they do. So if they don't understand,
1 minute,
it becomes a problem. So for me, it's a matter of involving the universities, having some serious discussions. CVE has the powers to go and interact with universities, just to double check what it is that they teach people that will leave the universities with a qualification, and then when they get to government or CGE or wherever, they are not able to perform. And the kind of content that they were taught is irrelevant to what you are doing. So CGE needs to look into that very seriously. The issue around the SDGs, you remember when I was with the CGE, that was before 2010, it was still the MDGs. The SDGs came in 2015. It's still a new concept to a very great extent. So one of the things that I can proudly say I did at the CGE at my time, I introduced and started to implement that part of the function of compliance with international instruments. Before I got there, they had never done anything along those lines. Your CEDAWs, your Beijing's and whatever. Nobody had touched that. But when I was there, I started. We wrote a report on the MDGs, highlighting some of the important, some of the loopholes that were there in terms of gender equality. So because the SDGs are still relatively new, I think it's a good time for the CGE to get into this whole thing and deal with it seriously. Because the MDGs were very limited in terms of gender equality, but the SDGs will cover, will help us arrive where we're supposed to be.
3 minutes over. Well, thank you.
You have done extensive work in assessing gender mainstreaming programs, including doing comparative studies and benchmarking as a consultant and other related things. Can you proudly say that our departmental budgets in South Africa are engendered? And can you also indicate whether our monitoring and evaluation tools are assisting in ensuring that women not only benefit through social services, your grants and other things, but also they too are central in the economic activities of government?
Can I respond? Very quickly, issues of the budget. South Africa is well known for, you know, we used to have very good people who are still very good in terms of use of gender budgeting. But I don't think we're using those people. The experience and knowledge that they have. They do a lot of work for people, for other countries rather than for us in the country. So until such time that we go back to gender budgeting as a serious issue, deal with it. And I think the Commission has the potential to can deal with that, to make sure that it's not necessarily address this in a sense of doing it, but working with people who are very knowledgeable. We have very good people who know gender budgeting. But until we use their expertise, we're forever going to be complaining about issues of budget which are not intended. So I think it's important for us to start looking seriously at that and targeting, you know, it as an area that needs to be sort of attended to. Our MNEs, I'm afraid I don't think there's much happening. We have a tendency of talking about how many times we have done whatever, the how many. But as to whether what we're doing has an impact. But we never really do that. So we haven't started to really get deep into finding out about the impact of all the laws and policies and everything that we have. We're still behind. How many workshops have you had? So how many? We're more into quantitative approach of doing things rather than into qualitative. And when you talk about gender equality, it's more about the quality. If you're talking about changing the lives of women, of people, it's not about how many workshops have you had. It's more about whether the workshops you had have an effect on the lives of people that you are workshopping. So until we reach that point, I'm afraid even our MNE in government, I found them wanting in terms of understanding gender equality issues. So there's a need for a serious look into how do we engender the departments that we have and make sure that issues of gender equality are taken seriously. And for me, if you look at the MDS, I like the SDGs because after having done some work around that, I've discovered that that's a tool that you can use
yeah.
to try and cover things.
3 minutes is over. It's unfortunate that you are giving us a lot of information and our time it doesn't allow. Thank you very much. Mama Chek, your hand was up. And then Nicole was the last one. Mama Chek, we've got only 7 minutes. That must be divided amongst the three of you, yourself, Nokolo and the candidate.
Mine will be very good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Salome, mine is to check. How would you handle, let's say you are a commissioner, fortunately you've been before, how would you handle conflict without being prejudiced, also ensuring the commission complies with applicable laws and acting in the best interest of the organization. Thank you.
Can I take the other question as well?
Oh, you want to take all the questions once?
I think so.
Okay, okay. Nicola?
Thank you, ma'am. I'm not sure exactly where in Bophuthatswana you are from, but I was born in Mahikeng.
Mm-hmm.
So we are from the same
Bophuthatswana.
It's Mahikeng. There's been an evolution. We are Erasmus. Okay. Ma'am, I have two questions. Well, one is the challenge. I disagree with you that we need to start with higher education. If we are going to stop tokenism and ensure authentic transformation, especially of the young black woman, we need to have a look at our curriculum in schools, basic education, because we need to teach people how to live, not just how to work. So I want to find out from you how you feel you could engage with, well, first, whether you agree, and secondly, whether you would try and engage with the Department of Basic Education to try and ensure that the curriculum is not just, you know, treating everyone the same and it's very biased towards men. And then I like what you said about the outcomes of expenditure and exercises. Box ticking is mostly a waste of time, etc. Now, I want to know how you believe you would be able to prevent tokenism and try and ensure that there's authentic transformation in the economy. Other than higher education, what else do you think contributes to that? Thank you.
You have 4 minutes to respond.
Okay. The issue around basic education, I mentioned higher education because I was specifically dealing with the issues of gender focal points. But when you look at how do we change the education system, I agree with you. We need to start there. I've been doing work with some schools, Deep Slot and Alex, on issues of violence, gender-based violence in the school, in the primary school. And I found it very shocking, you know. The teachers don't understand issues of gender-based violence. They don't know how to handle those kind of issues. And there's a subject that they have, life orientation. And I've been trying to find out exactly what that is all about, because for me that's an area where they should be dealing with this kind of issue. Teachers are even afraid if a child has a problem, a domestic violence problem maybe affecting him, the teacher will tell you, I can't help this child because the next thing I'll be expected to be a witness. And the next thing when I become a witness, then the family starts to look badly at me to think that I'm the one who's causing this. Now, there's a need for the Department of Education to look into issues of gender equality very broadly. And I think I agree with you in the sense that there is a need to look at the curriculum. Because if you want to prevent these things from happening, you have to educate. Education is the way to go. So that the kids, we don't deal with the problems, you know, at an advanced stage, but we prevent them from happening. So educating children, for me, it has to be part of the curriculum. The subject that you've just mentioned is the one that I think they should be looking at that kind of a problem. I once had a discussion with the minister, by the way, after having gone to Alex. I just had an informal discussion with her to talk about my experience with Alex and what I've seen in those primary schools. We're still talking. We haven't gone far with this. But I think I was talking as an individual. But if it has to come from an organized structure, I think it will make a difference.
Mama, take a question.
How do we deal with conflicts? Yeah, the commission has the powers to sort of deal with conflicts. For me, it goes back to getting education on how to handle this kind of issues. If you don't know how to handle these, it becomes a problem. So I would very broadly say there's a need to look at different ways of dealing with conflicts, whether it is within the structure itself or is this conflict somewhere else where you intervene in the conflict. So how to start doing that is still educating people on how to do it first and then take it from there and look at how best you can do it, depending on the kind of conflict you're talking about. Very broadly.
Thank you very much, Elfuki, for your honoring our invitation for this interview. I hope all honorable members, they did not crucify you, but they gave you a fair chance to respond to their questions. And it's only that time does not allow us to go beyond 45 minutes. Yeah. Do you have anything to ask, honorable members? We don't have any questions.
I have a question for the honorable members.
Yeah.
And it's a concern. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing here, but it's an issue that I don't know where to raise it. The issue about the Domestic Violence Act and the fact that the police are monitoring themselves in that. So I'm not so sure how Parliament can assist us to deal with that problem. Can I explain what it means?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the provisions of the Domestic Violence Act, there's a provision that has given the SAPS the responsibility of implementing part of it. Especially when it comes to when women report cases, they should do 1, 2, 3. The police, some of them do that, some they don't. We used to have what you called ICD, independent, whatever, right? That, yeah. Now, during the times of the ICD, they used to monitor this part of the act. And they used to write very good reports about the role that the police were doing and the problems that they were encountering and the inefficiencies that were there. So when you read the ICD report, you could be able to trace problems that are there within the SAPS in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. Now, that responsibility has been taken away from ICD, because ICD has now changed into IPIS, no? And it was not transferred to IPIS, but it was taken to, they have established an office called the Civil Society something, which is within the office of the Minister of Police. Now, they've given that task to that office, and that office is run by the police, by the way. It's in the Minister of the Police. We're complaining about gender-based violence and saying...
Sorry,
well,
not okay. Yeah, I can see that this needs another session.
Oh, okay.
But I think for us, you know, it's very informative. But what we can say to you, maybe you need to write a letter to multi-party caucus,
okay,
women's caucus, so that you can come and make a presentation.
Okay.
Because that's one of the responsibilities of a women's multi-party caucus.
Okay.
Yeah. If you can write it even today or tomorrow, and just email it to the Ornelisa, so that
okay.
The chair, Mom Story is the chair of multi-party caucus, women multi-party caucus, so that they, at least you can go there and deliver it on that matter.
Okay.
Yeah, because I can see that it's important,
and
we are not going
to.
Sorry, no, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because we are not going to do justice now.
Okay.
Due to time constraints. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Even for raising that with us. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. Have a safe trip.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.